Blog Talk Radio.
Hi folks, I'm Chris Daly, and with my partner Denise Maxwell, we seek out great Jamaicans doing great things, and we have a treat for you tonight. We're going to be introducing Michael Irvin Phillips, a man with a powerful pen. He had left Jamaica to come to Howard University, and he decided to actually stay in the U.S. He received 2 degrees, a master's in education, and a B.S. in chemistry. But that did not slow him down. When you have a powerful pen, you use it to write and to influence. And his book, Leave the Rat Race to the Rats, a sequel to his previous book, Boycott Money and To Save Your Soul, launching the Goodwill Revolution. The first book launched the Goodwill Revolution, which this one applied to it. Previous works is that of Poems for Husband and Other Underdogs, a compilation and publishing of portrait books, Bitten by Bonzo, and Living in Constant Spring. However, most recently, he has spent his time as a one-man production of Hot Collar Loop, a newsletter about Caribbean news and views. From April of 1992 to December of 1992, it was published monthly, but then technology has taken it over and he now publishes it on the web. This evening, Denise will engage him in some reflective conversation. Denise, take it away.
Chris. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Hi, both of you. It's quite an honor to be here, and I am glad to be here.
So share with us a little bit about your Jamaican roots.
Well, I was born in Kingston and spent most of my youth there. I went to KC for 3 years. Then we moved to Mandeville, and I went to Manchester High School, from which I graduated. Worked a year in Kingston, and then came to Washington, D.C. to attend Howard University.
And as you know, we are all alum. We all have that Howard connection, me, Chris, and you. So what influenced you to decide on a career of the choices you made?
Well, by education, I was trained to be a teacher. I actually went back home to Jamaica after I graduated for 3.5 years and taught in high school there, and then migrated to America. And when I came to America, you had to be a citizen to teach. It took 5 years minimum to become a citizen, so I ended up in the highway department as a highway engineer.
Oh, so you are just a well-rounded person. Okay, so describe the rhythms of the Caribbean that cultivated your soul.
Oh, that's quite a mouthful there. I'm not sure how to answer this, but I will mention the fact that, you know, as kids we used to go to the country during the holidays, and I remember going to Oraka Besa, and one of the things that struck me there, what my granduncle or something like that died, and they dug the grave on the property, and which was quite a job. It was rocky, and they had to change it. And I thought I was there, and the grave diggers would be singing the old Jamaican folk songs as I did. And this went on through the night, and that really made an impression on me. So maybe those songs cultivated my soul.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I experienced something like that too, in the country, because it's just not, you know, like burying your relatives on the property. I'm like, okay, well, there's something new. So your choice of Howard, you know, there's a saying that if you go to school, it's either the UE or Howard. You know, it's in your birth certificate contract. Is that true? What made you decide to go to Howard?
Well, Howard had a reputation already in Jamaica, and then my mother moved to Washington, D.C., and so it seemed destiny was pointing me to Howard, and I accepted it, although I was my brother and sister came ahead of me, my younger, and I was reluctant even to come to Washington, D.C., but destiny drove me to Howard, and so I went.
Yeah, the Jamaican connection is strong at Howie and you, and
the whole Caribbean.
Yeah, the whole Caribbean. But I was kind of focusing on us. So how'd you manage your experience to a new country? You know, when you, was it a culture shock, or you had some ideas about it?
Well, you know, looking back, I think it was not that much of a shock, because that's how there are many Jamaicans to cushion that shock. So it created a sort of bridge between this. Our culture and the American culture there. I mean, within the traveling to a new country is part of the important part of your education. Just that, you know. I remember within, I think, 6 months of being here. Yeah, I worked my way through college, and I got my first job was as a messenger for Western Union. That really got me to know the city. Riding a bicycle around Washington, D.C., that's a long time.
Oh, so you were one of those couriers. Yeah, believe it or not, they still have those. I didn't know that
they still have them?
I mean,
in the new electronic age.
I'm talking about, I'm based in Chicago. You don't see them out in the suburbs, but you do see them in the city. They're on their bicycle, and they got the little backpack. And it's interesting because, you know, Chicago, when it gets cold, they're still pedaling around. But it's really, I think it's because of the documents. Maybe they're sensitive documents and the one I'm going through. The thing.
Well, we only distributed telegrams, nothing sensitive. It was a hallmark for me, but I think it was the first job I made as much as a dollar an hour.
When I said curious, they have their backpacks, and they usually work with a lot of architecture firms going back and forth. That's how they do that now.
We weren't sophisticated.
Well, I'm telling you, so the concept is, the method of transporting is the same. The business model has changed for different products, but you have to change for the time, you know.
The important thing about it, I got a real good view of a cross-section of Americans,
because all
types of people get telegrams, and so that was a good introduction from that point.
Yeah, that and cab drivers. So
I also did that.
90%, and 90% of cabbies are foreigners. So really, you may say it's low on the totem pole in terms of status, in terms of jobs, but really that's how you get to learn a place, if you drive around.
Definitely.
And learn the ins and outs. So it is a good job. It is a good gateway job for
I consider driving the taxi my favorite job, because I was my own boss. I had my own hours. It was a luxury.
Yeah. So how are you in a better position to create a world by leaving the rat race, as in your new book? By the way, I've read your other books, and they're fantastic. And I encourage our audience to do the same. But we're focusing on the most recent book. And so how would you do that? How do you want to create a better world?
Well,
through your book.
Well, first of all, what the rat race, of course, is I think is the big problem with the world today, which is this fascination and addiction to money, seeking money at the expense of almost everything else. And this, I think, has really ruined our institutions, and it's a culture that is damaging. For in this culture of chasing after money, greed and selfishness are assets, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're kind and considerate and caring, they're pretty much liabilities, that is a big problem, and we don't realize it. But everyone is conditioned to that. That is part of our culture. and the culture, and it has created a lot of problems. Now, I'm leaving the rat race for the goodwill revolution, I call it, which is, instead of focusing on money, I'm putting people first. And by that, it's a message of Christmas, goodwill towards all. And I believe we should, all that energy that we turn towards making money, we should make our priority establishing strong relationships with other people.
So in other words, you don't want us to be a Gordon. Did you ever see the movie Wall Street with Gordon Gekko?
And yes,
instead
I
of
saw
there's
that.
A greed is
greed
good.
Greed is good. Greed is.
So you do
it,
not
it is
want
an advantage
be...
in this rat race. And I also like to mention my inspiration from the title came from Bob Marley.
Rat really? Race. Which song? Oh, Rat Race. Oh, yeah. That's true. He's a very influential person.
It's a disgrace. To see the human race in a rat race. That's the line from the Bob Marley thing, and Bob was right on target, which, you know, I've used lots of important persons, and like Dr. Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela as my authorities in writing this book. Now, the goodwill revolution that I talk about, and it's really, it's saving the world, but I'm focusing on the ghetto. The place that needs it the most is the ghetto. And, you know, and it's based on man's inherent goodness, which I believe man is inherently good. Of course, people have deliberated that, but in my book, I think I give substantial evidence that is the case.
Now that's an interesting part that you mentioned, the ghetto, because when you say you want to write about revamping the ghetto, many people willing to misinterpret that or interpret that as gentrification. And as you know, being in the D.C. area, gentrification does not help the people who live in the ghetto.
It helps
yuppies.
Right. It is the complete opposite of what I'm talking about.
Right. So unfortunately, this does not benefit. So what is the alternative solution to you're proposing here?
Well, as I said, it's strengthening relationships. Now, you know, in the ghetto right now, they push education, and deservedly so, become an entrepreneur and all this stuff. Well, a few choice people will benefit from that, but and they'll be plucked away from the ghetto. They'll graduate from the ghetto, but the ghetto remains bad. Now, me, I am concerned with the ghetto itself. I want all the people in the ghetto to be improved by this. And I think by focusing on relationships and strengthening goodwill towards all, you know, it's a rat race in the ghetto. It's each man for himself. We have high crime and we have bad policing and all those type of things in the ghetto. I want to change that, and I think this is a cultural change. It's a revolution. It's a cultural revolution. We have got to change. I'm changing attitudes here. And I am hoping that I will get some people to... My book is to start the revolution. I want leaders of this revolution. I want people to join the revolution.
So it's basically a spark or an instruction, a blueprint to get this, get a new mindset thinking.
Yes.
So technology continues at a rapid march, creating lifestyle changes in its wake. So how can we not compromise our humanity this week?
Well, unchecked with the rat race, we will compromise our humanity. That's one of the things that really worries me. Experts have said that technology might make labor irrelevant. There won't be enough jobs for people because technology will take over the jobs. So who will care about those people whose jobs have been replaced in large numbers? If we go along looking for money alone and not caring more about people, those people will be set adrift. And this is the type of thing that I am trying to prevent and raise in the consciousness. And at the same time, we will be ourselves better off by abandoning this mad pursuit of money and things and power, all those things, you know. And, and I like to use an example in the book, a hypothetical example here of two individuals. One I call Blue Blood Bob, who is rich. He lives in a $1 million house. He has a Lamborghini. And Ghetto Willie, who lives in a slum apartment, he has barely has a job that doesn't even pay a living wage. And but something is missing, and Ghetto Willie is better off than Bob. And you know why? Because Ghetto Willie is happy. And with all his riches, Blue Bud Bob is not happy. The problem is that our goal should be happiness, not rich. And we think that by becoming rich, we'll be automatically happy, and it's not so. Now, if you can be poor and happy, then why do you need to be rich? The chances of people in the ghetto being rich are non-existent. So let us aim for happiness. And that is what my book is doing. I am making happiness the real goal, and happiness is through strengthening relationships with each other and goodwill towards each other. And the one part, you know, I'm against retaliation, which is probably tough to imagine.
That's a human trait, to be spiteful and vengeful. So it is something that we all fall short of. So what wisdom do you have for parents about how to raise their kids today and not,
you know,
be a part of that vengeful cycle?
Well, you know, I'm going to, this is in my book, and, you know, the African phrase, it takes a village. Well,
yeah.
I want the ghetto to be not just a ghetto, I want it to be this village. And I use this example in my book. This mother, her son's bicycle is stolen, and it's stolen by a 7-year-old boy. And she's able to find the boy with the bicycle. And, of course, she gets the bicycle back and says, you're probably going to be a thief the rest of your life and all that, and you're on your way to think. Now, the goodwill revolutionary way is that this mother would seek out the mother of that kid and said, I'm concerned about your son. He stole my bicycle, and I think I could help him. And may I sit down and have a talk with both of you? And in the talk, I'm going to read this, if you don't mind. The talk should say, I'm concerned about your future, Johnny. Johnny is the one who stole the bicycle. Do you know, Johnny, that stealing a bicycle is a crime? Do you know that you could go to jail for that? That Johnny's only 7. Are you a thief, or do you want to be a thief? If you go to jail as a thief, you will be locked away and you will lose your freedom. Losing your freedom means you will not see your loving mother, your friends, be unable to play games, go to the movies, and so on. It will make your mother very unhappy, so unhappy, I'm sure she will just cry to lose you. Do you want to make your mother unhappy, to make her cry? Do you really think stealing a bicycle is worth that headache? Let us do things to make your mother proud of you. Your mother already has a very hard life working hard to look after you. Do not make it harder for her. I don't want you to go to jail. That is a horrible thing. Let's be friends. I hope you will let me be your friend. Whenever I see you, I will say hi and ask, how are you doing? It takes a village to raise a child. Let's be that village in the ghetto.
Quite true. And there was a time where if you, I'm sure you've read the stuff like James Baldwin, when he talks about how it wasn't ghetto. It was a sense of family, but not
yes.
so not like that anymore.
No, it's not.
Well, right, and everything changed dramatically, I guess in the 60s. So look in your crystal ball and paint two stories. 5 years out, what do you see? When we read your book and follow that blueprint that you have for us.
Well, you know, it's difficult. I mean, it would be really great if my revolution would take hold. I think we would eliminate a lot of problems. I think we'd have a
We're going to clean it, because when you, there's power in the words, so we're going to all apply your book and follow your advice.
Yeah, well, my aim in 5 years would be great, is to make the ghetto not only as good as the rest of the communities, but my aim is to make it better. Because yes, if it's loaded with the goodwillists, as I call people who follow the goodwill revolution, they will we will have a happier ghetto where people look out for each other, where people don't put money first, where people care about each other, and I think, you know, that is better than these Mac mansions sprouting up and two people living in a 60-room house in places like that. I mean, you know, it doesn't even make sense. We will, you know, with people valuing other people and this, you know, I talk about crime in it, removing crime in the ghetto, and I put the steps to do that too, fueled also by goodwill. You know, I don't know. My chapter on crime is the loser's game. I mean, as I said, you know, someone who does crime, they don't have any pension plan, they don't have any retirement, and they can be locked up at any moment, and they're robbing from poor people who don't have much money anyhow, you know, and I think we could manage crime by goodwillers, because a lot of the crime comes from gangs. Gangs have leaders. Leaders, if they are leaders, they have a certain talent, and they have a responsibility to their members to make sure that you give them the best opportunities.
It's a social structure. When you look at these gangs, and it's kind of like a corporation. There's a CEO and vice and minions
I think it's a mistake to try and break up gangs. The thing my book is doing, I am converting gangs to doing good. The thing is, people who join gangs have often been rejected, and gangs give them a sense of identity, of belonging, which their society unfortunately has not done. My objective is not to break them up, but try to get them to do good. Now, gangs have done good. In the Freddie Gray uprising that we had here in Baltimore with the police killing of that unarmed guy, during that violence, the gangs got together and tried to keep the peace. You know, hardly anyone knows about that. But it was reported. I myself wrote the mayor and said, you know, give them some positive reinforcement. Say, thank them. The church members should have got up in their pulpits and identified this wonderful law these people tried to save. But, you know, that's what we got to do. We got to use positive reinforcement. And I think we could get gangs, you know, gangs converted to a sense of belonging. And what we need to do is convert those gangs to do good instead of bad things. And I think that is feasible under my goodwill revolution, you know.
And so if we continue our present path, you see?
Yes. Well, our present task is, you know, as I said, all the time to is our present system is broken, you know, it's broken. Our political system is gridlock. We have homeless people all over in the richest country in the world. We have people running out in healthcare. We have police abusing unarmed black people. I mean, the system is broken, and it's only band-aids. The other thing is, we've got to make a cultural change. Those are band-aids, and it It's unlikely it's going to make any dramatic change, unfortunately.
And by reading your fantastic book, you do provide a blueprint for us to make changes in our lives and in our community. So how can folks follow you teaching and getting your fine work?
Well, my book is on Amazon, Leave the Rat Race to the Rats. It's also on, I'm having problems with my web page, which I only found out today. I thought it was all fine. But if you go to my hotkalaloo.com, which is my Caribbean sort of newsletter blog, if you click on the link there for the book, you can get it there. And it's you'll get a better deal from my website than you will at Amazon.
Amazon. So, any parting wisdom?
Well, I really hope we can get some leaders for the good revolution. You know, revolution is not easy. I mean, people, the civil rights revolution was some serious sacrifices and abuse that people took, and they stuck to it because they believed in what they're doing. Well, you don't have to do all this sacrifice. Physical and risk physical abuse, but you have got to make a decision to give up some of those sacred cause and materialistic beliefs that we've had.
Quite true.
And and it's not that hard. You know, people think it's hard, but we are bombarded with advertisement and brainwashed and all that type of stuff there like that. But it's not that hard.
It's not that hard if we put our minds to it. And
right.
The best way to do it is to read your book. So to learn about Jamaican Diaspora, visit JamaicanDiaspora.net. To learn more about Chris Daly, visit Digital to Grow Media. And as you know, if you visit Hot Kalaloo, you will see your wonderful book. Chris and Michael, we're very happy to spend some time with you. So bye now.
Bye, and it was great talking to you both.
Okay.